Happy holidays, everyone. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, and whatever else you do. If you worship Cthulhu, happy whatever that holiday is. We had last week off because of Thanksgiving, and now we're back to talk about something really anti-holiday. Again, this is another one of our rare couple killers.
Absolutely.
So, do we have any history?
Oh, I was just, damn it, computer's freezing up. I had it sitting there. It's a couple of news items about the turkey from last week that apparently got a guy out of a speeding ticket. Kind of interesting.
A bird turkey?
A bird turkey came up while they were doing the traffic stop and started raising a little bit of hell, and they went after him instead. That one's over at our page, like the rest of these.
The turkey distracted the cops.
Yes,
That's
he
hilarious.
did. Let's see. Florida man gets arrested after punching an older man who told him to stop masturbating outside our supermarket.
Yeah,
This is
take
in
that shit
Miami.
inside. Florida. Come on, you guys.
It just keeps getting weirder and weirder. We had the London Bridge attacks, which evidently they caught
Yes.
that sack of shit. And I don't
Good.
know if people caught this, but there was another separate attack that same day in The Hague, Netherlands.
Right.
The guy with the knife. I think they caught
The
him
media was
too.
trying to say we don't think they're connected, but I don't know, it seems a little coincidental.
Yeah, I think that would be one that we might want to wait for more info on.
Agreed.
See, ProPublica had a rather interesting story about a hospital who kept a guy on life support just so they could meet the numbers for their heart transplant.
What?
They kept him on life support much longer than they should have just to meet the numbers of the survival numbers. I guess they grade it
Oh, the
based upon a
mortality.
year.
Yeah.
They kept this guy alive way past that. And now the FBI is getting involved in investigating that hospital. So.
Because it's, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah, fraud.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But yeah, hopefully the feds can get them on something there.
Well, yeah, that'd be nice.
Two children hung in Berks County, Pennsylvania. They said that the mother was charged with those deaths, which I'm not totally sure why, but apparently the one kid helped hang his sister with him because he didn't want to go alone, was the quote.
So a kind of murder suicide, but kids?
Yes.
Well, why would the mother be charged then?
I wasn't thoroughly understanding that, whether it was neglect, I think might have been why. She should have seen something, but
Don't know.
that's.
That seems kind of sketchy.
Yeah, it's one we'll definitely be paying attention to. Let's see, Fox 35 out of Orlando, yet another Florida man who left his 12-year-old son at the side of a highway because he might be gay.
Is that some kind of cure?
I have no idea. Apparently, he found something that he construed as gay porn on the kid's phone, told him to pack a duffel bag, drove him out there, and just dropped him off on a highway.
Wow.
So they're getting him with neglect.
How old was the boy?
12.
Oh, come on, man. That's bullshit.
Yeah. Oh, it's complete bullshit. Just looking through the rest of these. Had an absolutely horrid case of child abuse out of Oklahoma. All about these people who were brought in on charges of beating their children, raping their children, manufacture of child porn, and apparently they also had a plan to commit incest on a, as of now, unborn child.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty fucked up. Then let's see. Oh, yeah, and then you had the guy who is convicted of an acid attack on the his baby mama, basically. Not sure what precipitated that, but she has 90% burns on her face from that.
Man. Where do people this acid they use in this? I mean,
this was this. I forget what they call it, but it's the kind
that
you
I'm planning anything, mind you.
Well, this kind was the kind that you pour down a drain.
Oh,
and apparently
why?
It causes heat. Yeah, to do its thing there. I don't know. It seemed to me like there's more and more acid attacks. You're seeing in the news.
Okay, so here's my problem with this approach for any morons who happen to be listening. You can't get away with it.
No.
You're
not
killing
all.
The person, you're just harming them, and they fucking see you do it.
Yeah. Oh,
so
absolutely.
So what exactly are you accomplishing? I don't understand. I do not understand these. Well, so many of what we talk about, I don't understand.
Yeah. I mean, the only times I had heard about it before was in the Middle East in the context of, like, an honor killing, where they would do something like that.
But it's not just a... Yeah, if you're going to kill somebody with acid, that takes a lot.
Yeah.
You're not just splashing it in their face.
Yeah. Absolutely. But, yeah, and then the last headline that I had was, I was curious, if they were to make a movie called Necrophile Cop, who should play the lead role? Because this guy was an LAPD officer.
Colin Farrell.
Hey, that would be a good one. That'd be interesting. But they caught this guy on, I guess, body cam footage. Fondling the breasts of a dead woman out there in L.A.
What, in the morgue? Or at the scene? Or what?
I thought it was at the scene, the way I understood it.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
I mean, dude. You're a cop. You got the uniform. If you still can't attract a girl... You know, the dead girls, yeah, they're still off limits.
Yep. Yeah, they still are. But, yeah, Lucas on our page suggested Steve Buscemi for that part. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a part befitting a Colin Farrell or an Adam Sandler, I think.
Yeah, Sandler wouldn't do it, though, because he likes to maintain his image.
His stupid guy image?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe him or Rob Schneider. Rob Schneider could do it. But,
all right.
Yeah, that is all I have for that.
And that is plenty.
Yes, it is.
So,
as I said, you can follow our Facebook page for more of the news.
Absolutely. It's called Real Monsters, just like the show.
It is. Well, Real Monsters podcast, but yeah. Yep.
So, this, we're going to talk about, we're going to take a little journey overseas to jolly old England.
Jolly old friggin' England and the Moors.
The Moors. Up in there northern England in Manchester area. So let's get that wide map up there.
Yeah, I was going to say that, and then maybe some pictures from the moors. It's so desolate.
Well, that's the thing. So I was actually watching some show, and there's a prison called Dartmoor.
Uh-huh.
And it's surrounded by the moors.
Oh.
And they've had very few escapes, but a good many of the prisoners who have escaped have ended up going back and turning themselves in because they couldn't survive getting through the moors to escape.
Oh, wow.
And a fair number of the ones who didn't turn themselves in ended up dying in the moors.
Wow. Dang. What's the actual landmass of the moors up there?
I don't know. I think there might be several patches.
So that's one thing I didn't look up.
Yeah. They have... Scotland has a fair amount of moors as well. So I don't mm-hmm. know. But it's pretty vast.
Mm-hmm.
So the moors... Let me pull up one of our images by itself.
It's so people can get an idea of the landscape.
Right.
Too.
What's a good one? Oh, yeah, that one.
And, you know, I liked what they said on a couple of the documentaries I was watching on this. This whole landscape of the moors kind of reflected the soul of especially Ian Brady, I think. If he can be even said to have a soul. But, you know, it was interesting what ultimately brought them down. Starting off kind of weird, but October 7, 1965... 17-year-old David Smith calls 999, the Brits' version of 911,
yeah,
after witnessing his brother-in-law kill somebody with an axe at their flat, basically. I'm not sure how he initially got away the call from a payphone, but he did. And this is what revealed the other murders that were going on. And in the process, a lot of the people who were there and living at the time tended to forget the details with time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had, you know, a whole new generation of Britons who really didn't know anything about it.
Right.
They just liked to sort of buried it. But, yeah, they went back to the original investigators, went back to the flat, and they find this other teenage guy, David Evans, who had been bludgeoned several times by an axe, and then Brady had wrapped him up in plastic in the apartment with the plan, I guess, to take them out to one of the moors and bury them.
Right.
The same way he did the other victims.
I mean, you can see from the picture what the moor... It's like... It's a vast grassland.
Mm-hmm.
With occasional bogs that can just... You can sink up to your knees really quick if you're not careful.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
absolutely.
You can,
you know, there's a lot of space that nobody goes to. I mean, there mm-hmm. are roads through it, but you don't get off of the road. You don't go hiking out here, except on designated trails. People aren't just going to be wandering around the moors just for the hell of it, right? So,
yeah,
as a body disposal area, it's pretty good.
Yeah, you could almost compare it in a lot of ways to the Mojave Desert. here in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are going to drive through it. There might be places where they're going to dispose of bodies, but they're in a whole lot of the way of hiking or tourism around there.
Exactly.
But, yeah, we actually have the crime scene photo of Evans when they found him, too, I think.
Yes, we do.
But yeah, they went that reminds through there.
Me. Let's we should put the warning up.
Oh yeah, good idea. Yeah, if you are easily disturbed by blood and guts and crime scene photos, what you're naturally going to see in them, you might want to turn this off right now. So,
all right. So let's go back, and I'll pull up the
image. Now, I am not, as far as David Smith goes, when they got him up there, I didn't find out whether there was a concrete reason that Ian Brady wanted to have control over him, like he thought he knew something about them or what have you, but there's one school of thought on this that says that that was his main goal of getting him up there, was so he could basically keep his thumb on him, because, you know, he's seen the murder too. But then there is another school of thought by some in the forensic psychiatry community that says that he, Brady got him up there because his grandiosity was starting to grow with every successful kill. Because with Evans, you're looking at, what was that, number five?
Yes.
He was number five, and that just, it kept escalating from there, as it tended to, but yeah.
Well, it's human nature to think that when you get away with something, the longer you get away with it, the more you start to believe you're always going to get away with it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You get that invincibility complex about it.
Right.
But yeah, getting a bit into who Myra Henley and Ian Brady were. Henley's childhood was rather normal, for lack of a better word. Normal working class Manchester. She wasn't abused as far as we know. Yeah, she didn't see anything that would have been traumatic and traumatized her at a profound level. But Brady, on the other hand, had a very opposite of that for his childhood. He was the bastard son of a waitress in Manchester. And he had no idea who his father was. So it just wasn't in the picture. But okay. Throughout much of his childhood, he made himself into a rebel, into an outsider. And at this time, you know, you had all these rock and roll teenagers,
right,
in that part of Manchester. You know, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones were getting big.
Yeah.
And so what does Brady do? He goes the opposite direction. Starts listening to classical music was his big thing. And starts dressing in, you know, tweed suits and the like.
Yeah, so if you're not fitting in anyway, why not go as far away from fitting in as possible, right?
Yeah. I think that was his logic too. And it was around this time that he started reading a lot of classical literature too. And by classical literature, I mean books like The Marquis de Sade, 120 Days of Sodom. Which, have you ever read that?
I have not.
I read it in high school.
Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't like required reading in high school, but I picked it up and I finished it in high school. And for people who don't know what this is, it's basically a catalog of perversions from the
Right.
man who literally they coined the term sadism after, the Marquis de Sade,
Right.
when he was incarcerated in the Bastille for being the problem that he was. He wrote down all this stuff, but like a few of them that are in there was a priest who would get his jollies off of sucking the mucus out of the noses of little girls is one.
Jesus.
But
Holy
then
cow.
it gets weirder into these noblemen who would get their jollies off of dunking pregnant women in acid and stuff like that. It gets into dyed-in-the-wool erotophonophilia, which, as we've talked about before, is lust murder, where you get your jollies off from murder.
Killing, yeah.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I think he
And
was
in that
writing
day and
about.
age, if you were part of the nobility, you could literally get away with murder.
Yes. Oh, yeah, you
I mean, as
could
long
back
as you
then.
weren't stupid and killed another noble.
Yeah.
If it's just
Which,
a peasant person, then yeah, you could get away with that.
yeah. Which, de Sade, when he wrote his books, a lot of it was geared as just basically pornography. He was
Yeah.
looking at how far he could push the envelope with all that. And other books like Justine would be his other big one. But yeah, if people wanted to see that on film, they've done a few film takes on the 120 Days of Sodom. The main one is Salome,
Oh, yeah.
Salome, which, yeah, is from that book. But Ian Brady was also very influenced by, I guess, Hitler. I don't know if he really
Right.
called himself a Nazi, but apparently he read a lot of it, a lot of
There's no
Mein
real
Kampf.
indication that he hewed to the belief system of Nazism. I think he was enthralled by their brutality.
I would agree with that assessment. Yeah, because I didn't see any indication of that either. And that was interesting when he and Henley finally met up at, I guess they were working at the same place, is what started it all.
Okay.
He employed various tricks to sort of gain control over her that were very reminiscent of cult leaders and what they would do.
For example.
Although he started off just playing hard to get, and that's what kind of sucked her in. But
Ugh, girls, don't be suckers.
but you know, he started doing everything that he could to basically just get her ego down to nothing, to destroy her ego. And
Oh,
in
yeah,
fact,
emotional
after,
abuse.
yeah, and a big part of that was feeding her the stuff that he was reading too, and then showing her all these films about the Holocaust were big parts of that. But after the
So
first murder,
conditioning her to these horrible ideas and
yes.
practices.
Yes. And that takes us, what Brady's goal was at that juncture, he wanted to commit the perfect robbery. And that's all it was at this juncture. But this ultimately escalated to him wanting to commit the perfect murder. And so what happens was they abduct, I was just looking for her age.
Oh, she was a teenager.
Yeah, I thought 14 for Pauline Reed.
Right.
But they abduct her and they take her to the moors, and Henley stays out of sight while Brady takes her up.
Sixteen. She
And
was 16.
Oh, okay, 16. But Brady, he takes her up to the moors while Hinley stays out of sight, and he apparently has his way with her and slits her throat.
So what's interesting is that Pauline was a classmate of Myra's sister. And so that made it easier to
abduct her, to get her into the car.
Because she was familiar, right?
Yeah.
And they made her, the ruse was that she had lost, she, Myra, had lost some expensive gloves out on the moors. Like, really? Mm-hmm. And if she helped find them, then she would give us some records to Pauline.
Yes, and meanwhile, Brady was following them on a motorcycle.
Right. The whole way.
But so they get there, and that happens. And there was an interesting quote that Hinley gave her prison psychologist when she finally started talking in the 1980s. She said, "It was after that first murder that I knew God did not exist." That she was, in essence, totally sucked into Ian Brady's way of thinking.
We've heard this before, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was, but there was another serial killer who we've talked about on the show who said, you know, if there was a God, he would stop me.
Well, Albert Fish, I think, said that.
Maybe that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Also a pedophile.
Yes. Yes. And also a bisexual pedophile like Ian Brady, apparently.
Right.
But, and it went on from there. And the next one, I believe, was John Kilbride, wasn't it? Or am
yes.
I skipping
no,
one?
No, that's right.
Okay.
12-year-old boy.
12-year-old, he was out for a day at the cinema. And apparently after that, instead of going home, he went down to the local market where they would pay him for, like, collecting boxes for people.
Okay.
So he decided, you know, he's going to do what 12-year-old boys do, try to get a little bit of pocket money.
Right.
And that was where Brady and Hinley picked him up and took him to another part of the moors.
In this documentary about the Moore murders, his mother said that she had warned him because they knew that Pauline had gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had warned her son, John, about, you know, to be very careful. And then she says, "I didn't warn him about women because I didn't mm-hmm. know there were bad women."
Exactly. I don't think anybody would have thought that, you know.
Right.
It looks so much more innocuous when you have a couple and not just, you know, a guy.
Exactly
doing
right.
That.
That's exactly how it worked for the other English couple that we talked about, the Wests, Fred and mm-hmm. Fred and Rose.
Yep. Them too. And you know, that's the other thing too, even talking about how he manipulated Hinley, you still have the simple fact that I think she might have been able to stop him after that first murder.
Right. There's a lot of indication that, you know, she never participated in the sexual assaults or murders, but she absolutely encouraged him in to pursue the things that made him happy. That kind of language. She used that kind of language.
Yes, and she absolutely was an accessory too. I mean, there's no way that she could have not known what he was going to do.
Well, she saw the bodies.
Kids.
I mean, especially after the first one. And they absolutely would have discussed what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Not to mention, I'm sure that he probably enlisted her help with burying them. out on the moors.
She says no, but yeah, like one, I think it was the time with the first one with the motorcycle that she actually left the scene for a while and then came back late, like a half an hour later.
Yeah, I think you're right with that one. With the others, though,
But then
I'm not so
she went out and
sure.
saw the body of Pauline. And so she absolutely knew what was going on.
And to order or to answer Patty's question, this guy is sick, sexual assault, then brutally murdering. Did he sexually assault after death? There's no indications of that that I saw. None of necrophilia.
No. He would disable them
Oh, yeah.
through a variety of means, so that they were easier to, to rape. But yeah, he killed him afterwards.
Yeah, and I mean, we have to remember that his main thing again was erotophonophilia. I mean, you can have that in necrophilia,
Yeah.
but yeah, I
Bun
think it
speak
was
Bundy,
the,
for example.
yeah, Bundy would be a great example there, but yeah, I don't think that Ian Brady had it. But yeah, I mean, you had John Kilbride, and it, let's see, no, I don't think it was then when they started searching more on the moors. I was just looking for the next one.
Keith Bennett.
Oh, yeah, that's right. My notes are a bit out of order. Keith Bennett, that was one where they, or no, wait a minute. That wasn't until the last one where they took him to the house, was it?
Right.
Yeah, Keith Bennett was a another one. They abduct again and take him out to the moor.
Again, the lure on this one, the ruse was to help him loading some boxes.
Which I think was close to the one that they used for Kilbride too,
Yes.
where
Yeah,
they
very
got him.
similar.
Which
Hey.
Kilbride also they killed with a ligature, not stabbing him.
Right.
This one, it was a shoestring that they strangled him with. But yeah, Bennett, I don't think they ever found his body to this day.
I believe that's true, that they had the Brady and Myra tried to take them and find the spot, but they never did. And it's, things change over time. Landscapes change, memories change. And yeah, they tried to help the authorities locate his body, and that they never did.
Which that was 1964 with Keith Bennett. He was actually abducted while walking to his grandmother's.
So there's substantial cooling off periods going on here, like
Yeah.
6 months ish.
Yeah, roughly. Roughly for Brady.
Yeah.
Although I don't think we should discount here that Henley was getting sexually aroused by watching him get sexually aroused. I think to some degree with that.
So how do they keep their interest level up for 6 months? If buried bodies, you can't just go out and revisit them so easily, right?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. I mean, it could be just that his neurochemical makeup says that that is the schedule that he would need to do it over.
I mean, like, yeah, it would be like he would feel, fulfilled, satisfied for a long period after one occurrence.
Yeah, although it could also be the other side of this that we know that they did was they took a lot of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Which could have, you know, tided them over for that. Because that actually gets into their last victim. Well, last before Evans, who got them caught. And that was 10-year-old Leslie Ann Downey, who was abducted at a fair. And with this one, they didn't just photograph this poor child in various bondage poses. They also took an audio tape recorder throughout everything that they did.
Oh my God.
The transcript of that tape is online now.
Yeah, that's something I could do without.
Yeah, I figured we kind of had to read it, which is why I sent it to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much worse, too. I don't know if we talked on the show yet about the letters that I received from Roy Norris and Lawrence Bittaker, the Toolbox Killers. Did we talk about that at all?
No, not yet.
Because these guys were another notorious pair who did the same thing. Mm-hmm. They made an audio tape.
Ah.
Their victim was older. It wasn't 10. She was, I think, 19 maybe. But reading the transcript of that one is just, oh my God. But it had me thinking which one is worse. And I have to give it to Myra and Ian because that is just how evil it is being done to a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
But, Lawrence was one that will talk to us and we'll be having more of an update on that. John Douglas, in fact, who we've talked a lot about on this show of the FBI,
mm-hmm.
of the BSU, he called Lawrence Bittaker the most loathsome human being he's ever met.
Wow. That's saying a lot. Because yeah. He's met them all.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you're talking about a guy who has interviewed Charles Manson, among so many others, but he also called him probably the best example of pure psychopathy because Bittaker was a guy who also didn't have a bad childhood. But,
right.
Yeah, Bittaker said he'll talk to us as long as I send him enough stamps. So we're going to do that.
Enough stamps for what? Return postage?
Yep.
Or do they trade them?
Yeah, I didn't think I could send them there at all, but he corrected me in the letter. He's like, yeah, it's no problem. Okay. So, yeah, that's what I was like.
Yeah.
He seemed kind of like a guy who would not bullshit you, even though you know he's a psychopath. Norris seemed
like
a guy who would
get you around. By the way, not all psychopaths are liars.
Yeah.
That's a separate thing.
Yeah, I mean, some of them want the record to be clear about what they've done, but yeah, Norris, on the other hand, was a guy who struck me as one who would just yank us around if we pursued it. So, yeah, to hell with him, we'll talk to Bittaker. But yeah, going down that digression, these two just reminded me of that, because it's really not something you see that often either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the creation of a snuff audio tape or a snuff videotape.
Right.
It kind of makes you wonder why.
Why people don't make more of those?
Why these killers don't do more of it.
So, two reasons spring to mind. One is, it's evidence.
Yeah, that's true.
And two, they seem to have very intense, detailed recollections that they can play back those scenes in their own minds in vivid detail, and so they don't really need that because of, again, evidence.
Yeah, but then the question that I would have in response to that, what about trophies? They take a lot of
They
trophies.
do. They do that. Not all of them do, but mostly they do.
Yeah, not all of them, but quite a few indeed. But yeah, and they it's just horrible what they did to Leslie Ann Downey. And she was one. They had a rather interesting story as to how they found her and the others that were buried. They were searching out there with the in the moors, and I guess the main tool that they would use for something like that is just a long bamboo pole that you would stick into that ground, and then you would pull it out with the idea that if it hit a body, you're going to smell it. So they were doing that, and they were about to pack it in for the day when you had one investigator who saw what he first thought was a stick or a sheep bone sticking out of the ground. And it turned out to be the bone of a human female. And it turned out to be Leslie.
So the police weren't just sitting on their hands during this time, as that story illustrates. There was we got a comment on Facebook of somebody whose parents had the police knock on their door looking for Pauline.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
And he hadn't even been born yet, but he heard about it growing up. They were literally going door to door looking for her.
Wow.
And so this is not at all a case where the police were waving it off as, runaways or anything like that. And in fact, in the documentary, some of the people locals said that, anytime a kid went missing in those neighborhoods, everybody just went out and started looking. The whole neighborhood went out
And searched.
and searched. Anytime a kid came home late, whatever the reason, they all figured, the kid's just goofing off somewhere most of the time.
But to be sure,
But to be sure,
yeah.
The hue and cry went out, hey, Johnny's missing, and everybody go, well, let's go find him. So
Wow.
it was, not the kind of community where somebody could disappear without being noticed. And so I think that plays a large role in how quickly these two were apprehended, because it was not taken lightly. It was not dismissed by the police. It was noticed from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, it took them screwing up basically
Usually
to break
does.
it wide open.
I mean, it usually does. But
Oh, absolutely.
the fact that the police weren't just waiting for something to happen. They were out putting in a lot of effort. So kudos to them.
Absolutely. Definitely. But yeah, they got him through the court system after discovering that with Evans and it all unraveling after. They both got life. And Myra, I think, got life plus 7 years for some add-on charge with that. But Brady, he didn't really want to speak, and she didn't either up until the 1980s. And that's when she kind of started giving her version of events. And then Netflix actually has an interesting special about this that Ian Brady did shortly before he died in 2017. He gave a briefcase to his lawyers with instructions never to open it. So now everybody's in a tizzy about what might be in that.
So if nobody was supposed to open it, why give it to the lawyer?
I think just as a ploy to keep it going even after he's dead.
I mean, it would make sense. I mean, in my mind, it would make sense. Do not open this while I'm alive.
And my understanding was the instructions were don't open it ever.
Well, then
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
And personally, he's dead if he's now, dead, too. I fucking would open it.
Well, you know, I was thinking that too, but then I was also, if you're a lawyer and you're in that position and you open it, it might kind of screw you with your other clients if they see that you're willing to, you know.
Well, I mean,
violate that.
Does the attorney client privilege hold after death?
Good question.
I don't know.
I honestly don't know.
I don't know. It kind of feels like it shouldn't, maybe, but maybe
I'm
going to
Google it over here. It's a good question. I'm going to Google it. But yeah, there's still, you know, people are like, well, does it hold clues to his motives? Well, no, probably not, in my opinion. You want the best clues for that, just look at the crime scenes themselves, yeah. I think.
There's another interesting aspect to this, and it might also be tie into why, you know, the fact that they got caught so early. But so many of these cases, there are other murders attributed to the killers that they think they did it and they're even pretty sure that they did it, but they can't prove that they did it. But I don't see any speculation about other cases associated with these two.
Yeah, I didn't see much of that either. And yes, attorney-client privilege survives client's death.
Well, shit.
Let's see. This is the,
you know what,
CBA.
For all anybody knows, it could be full of fucking toilet paper, and he was just fucking with people.
You know, I think that's probably close to likely, knowing Ian Brady. The feel that I got for him in doing research kind of says that it was that. Let's see, this is the San Diego County Bar Association. Pursuant to Business and Profession Code section, an attorney must maintain inviolate a client's confidences. The only exception in that statute is that an attorney may, but is not required to, reveal confidential information to the extent that the attorney reasonably believes the disclosure is necessary to prevent a criminal act.
Right.
That the attorney reasonably believes is likely to result in death of or substantial bodily harm to an individual.
Right. So, for all you budding psychopaths out there, you can tell your your lawyer the things that you actually did, but don't tell him what you're planning to do.
Yeah. Yeah. About the only one that, well, not even a priest, even the seal of a Catholic confessional works that way.
Right.
Yeah, they're interesting. One of the more interesting cases in British criminology.
Yeah, it really is. You know, such a... Well, for one, there was no real, and maybe it's again because I don't know. It was like 2-year time span.
Mm-hmm.
it didn't escalate. I mean, it didn't, they didn't devolve time wise. It didn't start off at 6 months and go to 4 months and 3 months and crap like that. I mean, we've seen cases. I mean, hell, Bundy went and to two different crime scenes on the same night in Florida. Yep. It was getting that bad for him.
Yeah. Yep.
But we didn't see that with these two. It stayed pretty solidly right around 6 months.
Yep.
Even though
63 to 65, roughly.
Yeah. And they, even though they became more and more depraved in their acts, they didn't feel a need to, ramp up the, shorten the cooling off period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't feel a need to.
Maybe it's because there was two of them. I don't know.
It could be. I wonder what their cooling off period looks like compared to similar. Like, let's say Fred and Rose West.
Yeah. Those two are interesting because they were almost opportunistic in who they abducted. They would abduct girls who, kind of crossed their paths. And so,
mm-hmm.
plus they would keep them alive for a while, oftentimes for weeks.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a solid correlation there, but interesting.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, of course, we would have to look at more than just them, too, with
right.
a question like that. Maybe I'll do that. Put it on a spreadsheet and see what we get.
Well, I mean, look at Lucas and Tool. I mean, they sometimes didn't have hardly any cooling off period.
Yeah.
But then they'd have long ones that we know of, even though they claimed that there was many more cases that, they weren't actually connected to.
Mm-hmm. They were lovers, too.
True.
Yep.
Yeah, that would make an interesting spreadsheet.
I'm going to have to do that when I get the time here.
Okay. Well, very sick fuckers, these two.
Yeah.
And let's not diminish the fact at all that these were pedophiles.
Exactly.
All of them were children. All of their victims were children.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I found kind of curious, too, with the... It's almost like the ages went down and then they went back up.
Yeah, it's like age wasn't really a key factor for them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they were, if you look at how they hunted, they were they'd put themselves in a place and see who came along.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't prowling. They would park in an area and then keep mm-hmm. an eye out and go that one.
Yeah, and there would still be a lot of forethought to it. A lot of pre-planning to
right.
these murders, definitely. But, yep.
Okay. Well, I think that wraps up these crazy motherfuckers.
I think so.
Ian Brady and Myra Hindley.
I don't think I have anything else on them.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it probably is a good thing.
All
Did
right.
Do you know who we wanted to do next week?
Who?
Oh, I was going to, if you didn't have anybody in mind, I was going to suggest David Parker Ray.
Ooh.
He's one of the few who hasn't, he was never convicted of murder.
Really?
Yeah, but he's one of the sickest of them we're going to see. The toy box killer.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and I mean, and you know, coming up, we have a special take on the Adam Walsh case. The Adam Walsh case, yes.
With a special guest. Special guest who was there.
Who was a witness.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was there on the day that Walsh was abducted.
And he wrote a book about it.
He did. So we will have him on the 19th, I believe.
Yep.
Stay tuned.
All righty. Well, that's it for tonight. Good night, everybody.
Have a great night.